This is Lou Groza of the Cleveland Browns. Hi, Ohio for Cleveland.
What's up, y'all? That's Anthony Sellers.
And that's Eric Jordan.
And this is Browns in Our Blood.
A weekly show where we talk about our favorite team, the Cleveland Browns. You can catch it in video and podcast.
On the /podcast group.com. And Must Long Sound Vision.
So
Sunday.
I hate y'all. I got like 15 seconds.
And gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to episode 60. 60 episodes in. Episode 60 of the number one concert review podcast in the world. I'm your host, EG, and welcome to Catch the Show. How are y'all doing? I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right because honestly, I'm a little disappointed with the listenership, I guess. I wanted to say viewership, but you can't view a podcast unless it's on YouTube. But yeah, if y'all have not listened to my Slipknot episode, please go fix that and give that episode a listen, man. Not too much hard work, but yes, it's 2.5 hours long almost, but just skim through with some shit. I don't care how you listen to it, just listen to the damn thing. Go listen to my Slipknot episodes. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to me if you go listen to the Slipknot episode. Go listen to even my latest episode of my other show, The Underground Monster, if you care about Juggalo and underground hip-hop related shit like that. If not, whatever, but if you know someone that does, pass it along to them. Just go listen to any of my previous episodes that may interest you. If you are a true podcast listener, do that thing. As well as make sure you are following me on social media, Twitter and Instagram. Same handle, same username, @ Catcher of Shows. Get on there and like all my shit before Instagram takes the likes away. Do all that @ Catcher of Shows on Twitter and Instagram. And do the same thing for the collective of amazing podcast brethren that I am part of called the Hyphen Podcast Group. Same places, Twitter and Instagram @ Catcher of Shows. Again, that's me. But Twitter and Instagram @ Hyphen Podcast Group. Follow them there. Do the nice things such as listen to the shows, subscribe to this show, my other shows, and their shows as well. All of them all on the same network, same community, Hyphen Podcast Group. Great shows like Hyphen Nation, Isla Pal, which stands for It's Like a Podcast or whatever. A podcast called Fresh for all your nerdy nerd talk, comic books, and all that jazz. Browns in Our Blood for the football people, the sports junkies, and many more, man. We have several shows that make up the Hyphen Podcast Group. You can find us on the social medias, like I said, man, @ Hyphen Podcast Group on anywhere where you can search @, the @ symbol and then something. And then, of course, if you're old-fashioned, we have a website, www.hyphenpodcastgroup.com. which has all the shows laid out there and all the shows' episodes and stuff there. You can go to that site and find everything there, and they'll take care of it. We're on all the podcast platforms: Apple, Spotify, even Stitcher, Anchor, Google Play, and you know, so on and so forth. So, you know, hey, just you have no excuse. to be listening to this and not listening to everything else. No excuse at all. We also have a Patreon just to help support the website, keep the website up, so that you, people like you, can go there and support and find all the shows and listen to the episodes and stuff. You know, the link to the Patreon is in the, should be in the show notes, be in the description of this episode and past episodes as well, so that you can just support, pick a tier, become a patron, and all that jazz. So yeah, man, I'm gonna keep it brief as much as I can. Some of you already know how that goes. But yeah, man, yeah, this is episode 60, and we're getting closer to the end of the year, which is weird. We're getting closer to the end of the year, which is really weird. Year's just been going by fast like nothing. But yeah, man, we got a few things to talk about. First thing I want to address before I get into the news and a couple of tours that are going to be happening very soon. The catch-up. No one has given a shit about the catch-up, to be frank, to be honest. But, I've been thinking about it, because I'm just like, you know, I said I was going to do it. The last time we did earlier this year was a big thing. You know, me and HPG affiliate, or just, you know, one of the main... The Nick Fury, in my opinion, of Hyphen Podcast Group, Marcus Show Mad Love Robinson. We did a couple episodes in relation to the catch-up, which for all you that are listening to this and don't know what the catch-up is, the catch-up was a segment that I have done twice now where I just went to an artist's catalog, an artist that I'm familiar with but not really familiar with their albums, per se, and I just went to their catalog and it just... made my way from the first album up to either their last album or up to a certain point in their catalog, depending how large, how mass their catalog is. First act I did was Kiss. I've always known who Kiss was. I used to love Kiss as a kid, but I never actually heard a Kiss album until I did the catch up. And the second one I did was 3-6 Mafia. Same thing for them, which made me a huge 3-6 Mafia fan, and ended up seeing DJ Paul live for the first time this year, right afterwards, which was perfect because I knew all the words, all the songs, and it was, yeah. So I'm the catch up is gonna be coming back. It was supposed to come back this fall, but just, you know, I ended up having another podcast I was doing, and the shows have been picking up for this show. You know, the concerts have been picking up for me to see. So, yeah, I just basically have not had enough time to really thoroughly get the catch up together the way I want to. I mean, I was still trying to figure out who am I going to do on, but I'm pretty sure I know who will be next for the catch up. It's going to be hip hop. It's going to be rap. And it's going to be a very interesting way to tackle it, is the way I'm going to do it. But we're going to do that. 2020. We're gonna do that in early 2020, because I think the music news anyway shit will be pretty slow. Good time to do that stuff because I normally do the catch up. I normally review the albums where at the beginning of the episode before I get into the actual show, and so I think that'd be better. And yeah. So that's it. You know, yeah. Who the catch-up will be on, I will save that for the last episode of this year. The last Catch the Show episode of 2019. I will say who I will be doing for the catch-up in 2020. So, yeah, that's that. Let's just get into the music news at this point on, which I really only have... couple things to talk about. I had a lot more, but I just, you know, they became old news at this point, and really stuff I don't really have much of an opinion about. I'm still, after doing this show for a year now, I'm still tweaking things as we go. Because I can ramble on about some shit that some of y'all probably don't even care about. But go listen to my last episode of The Underground Monster. Or go listen to the Slipknot episode I just told you to listen to. Go listen to that. You know, I can ramble on about some shit that 90-80% of the population could not care about. And, you know, hey, I mean, for a good podcast, it's got to be some things to care about. It's got to be some topics to talk about. I could talk about T.I. being a weird dad. And you know, examining his daughter's hoo-ha. But, you know, I think everyone across the board can agree that that is just, yeah, that's it, you know. But, what I don't think everyone across the board is agreeing with is what recently happened at the Camp Flognaw Festival that is done by Odd Future, or just Tyler, the creator himself. Camp Flognaw is played. I wanted to go to Camp Flognaw. It's a good thing I didn't go this year, because there's been a little controversy lately, in case you haven't heard. So, when Camp Flognaw was first, when the lineup for Camp Flognaw this year was originally announced, I think I might have even covered it on the episode, but there was question marks in the lineup on the top, almost on some top billing, and so everyone had their, that was going, had their speculation of who was going to be, and I guess it seems like from what I've seen, most people, majority of the people going there were expecting Frank Ocean. I guess because of the Odd Future tie-ins and whatnot. I didn't know. I didn't even care. I forgot about it until somebody recently brought it up amidst all this nonsense going on. Water on the podcast. Who'd have thunk? But, yeah, it turned out to be Drake. And he was not well received, as most of you know. He got booed. He got booed off the stage. He had to leave. He knew, he could tell the crowd was not feeling him, and he had to leave. And this caused a whole frenzy, I guess. I don't know what to say. Like, it just basically, It was a topic for a couple days. Kind of still is. And what I agree on with people is that booing is not cool. Booing sucks. I kind of defer in that I get booing. I get it. I understand it. Nobody wants to be booed, though. I don't want to be booed. You don't want to be booed. Nobody really wants to be booed. It's not a fun feeling. It's also straight up annoying. You know, it can be annoying. It can be just dumb. I have to point out. There was this series at one time where we were trying to build a boy band together. Of former boy band members. I think the lineup was, what's his name? Brian, is it Brian from Color Me Bad? The main lead singer basically of Color Me Bad. Chris Kirkpatrick of NSYNC. I think his name is Jeff of 98 Degrees. And the late Rich Cronin of LFO. I can't remember what the show was. But they put them all together in a boy band. They did the national anthem at some game, and they got booed. And when they went back, Rich Cronin made light of the situation by just sort of basically breaking down, you know, jokingly, like, how does, you know, the concept of booing, and how someone can even get to the point of booing. It's a funny vid you can find online, you know, rest in peace to Rich Cronin. Rich Cronin. Rich Velafo. But yeah, booing stinks. It's not fun to get booed. Nobody wants to get booed. That's basically it. I agree with that. What I don't agree with that a lot of people were saying on is sort of this pity party for Drake. I don't feel bad for Drake. I don't feel bad that Drake popped up at a festival of a certain crowd that last thing you would think is, oh, they will go nuts for Drake. A certain crowd, and they didn't receive him well. And they let it be known. And yeah, I don't agree with a lot of people sort of acting like, what is wrong with you people? You booed Drake? How dare you boo Drake? You should be appreciative that Drake was even in your presence. I love Drake. Not everyone loves Drake. Not everyone is a fucking Drake fan. I'm still mixed on Drake after all these years. And I've been following his damn career since he was on Degrassi. Literally, when it came out, the Drake was like, wait, so Drake's just Jimmy from Degrassi, the Next Generation? That's who this Drake guy everyone's talking about is? Fast forward to now, it's like, we all know who Drake is. And, again, booing sucks. I don't agree with booing, but it happens. It's a thing. It's not a new concept. It's nothing new. Booing's been going on forever. It ain't none. Booing still goes on. Go to a wrestling event. Go to a sports event. Booing is still a thing. And I guess it's just this sort of fact that, okay, they booed a big name artist, one of the biggest artists in the world. And everybody kind of feels sympathetic or sorry about it. Everyone feels ashamed over it. I get it, but at the same time, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like, yeah, booing it's not cool. You know, but at the same time, it's Drake. Like, are we really upset that Drake of all people got booed? And I mean, the context of the situation on top of, it's not his crowd. Like, that's an odd future crowd. Like, let's take it that that's an odd future crowd, or at least a crowd that is not a mainstream rap or pop loving crowd, which Drake falls in the category of. So Drake isn't necessarily what most of those people are looking for. I mean, the kind of joke or whatever the rumor was that everyone was expecting Frank Ocean, and they wanted Drake to leave so Frank Ocean could hit stage, but Frank Ocean was never, I guess, expected to even be there. And if that's the case, then I mean, how did that, I just don't get the whole take that everyone is going with this, where it's just kind of like, fuck them for booing Drake. How you guys boo Drake? Well, you guys don't like Drake? What's wrong with y'all? How y'all not like Drake? A lot of people don't. There's people that don't like Beyonce. There's people that don't like Rihanna. There's people that don't fucking like Tyler, the Creator. Where have we reached this point where, and so many artists, so many celebrities, so many industry people that are on my timeline, just kind of just like, I'm going to stream Drake because y'all crazy. Really? You think Drake is hurting that bad where he needs your support through streaming? Like, you think it's that sad, that upset? I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a part of Drake that's just like, what the fuck? I thought they would like this, which sucks. But I mean, I just don't get the whole in defense of Drake about it. And I know part of it has to do with, like, you know, Drake does come with this, you know, with him being so huge and just so I don't know. I mean, just there's a cynical part that comes out of people with him, and it's just like, eh, fuck Drake. Even though I kind of like Drake, I guess. But I guess, you know, to say it's cool to hate on Drake, some people say, which I don't really think it's cool to hate on Drake. I just think he just has a lot. There's some things to critique with him, and I think he is a little overrated in some parts, but at the same time, he deserves his credit in aspects. But it's like, this was not his crowd. Like, if this fucking same, if he popped up at a fucking Warped Tour or something, and the crowd did the same thing, or people, or, I think it would even be more ludicrous if people were doing the same shit. Like, how do y'all not like Drake? Because they're a fucking punk crowd. So how did a fucking Odd Future crowd, a crowd that prefers what, maybe like Brockhampton and Thundercat and West Coast Rap and Tyler the Creator and Frank Ocean, how did they not love an appearance by Drake? Because they're not Drake's crowd. It's plain and simple. I just don't get the just sort of this bandwagon of fuck those fans and we y'all should love Drake, and it just kind of annoys me. It just feels like this elitism bullshit, kind of. It just feels very elitist, you know. Especially on the aspect that we always make fun of Drake, don't we? Doesn't everybody make fun of Drake and his fans and his stans that he has? So, like, when all of a sudden, now all of a sudden we feel bad for it. I don't know. There's also a part of me that just is kind of, that has a, this, you know, not conspiracy, but just sort of an opinion on how the rap community cherishes rappers a little too much, you know, where it's just like, you know, you look at the Free ASAP thing, or just how free a lot of rappers that sometimes don't really deserve to be free. Not saying that ASAP Rocky didn't deserve to be free. That whole situation was fucked up in itself, but just sometimes we champion things for rappers when they don't always deserve it, because it's just, you know, I don't know, it's just some glamorizing and love for rappers. Like, the whole thing with 21 Savage and Ice. You know, you hoped he got out of the situation, but at the same time, it's like, oh, he got a lot, he got some privilege, you know, he got some special treatment because he's 21 Savage, he's a rapper. But what about all the other immigrants and people that have been detained by Ice? You know, that kind of thing, where it's just sort of like, you know, we hold rappers too high, or we just hold artists in too high in regard, and want them to get special treatment against over everyone else. And it's just like, if any other Joe Schmo got booed, we laugh at it. I mean, hell, if it was Ja Rule, we laugh at it too. But because it's Drake, no, that's where we have to draw the line. I don't fucking get it. Because Drake's popular, Drake's the biggest artist in the world. If Drake's the biggest artist in the world, he can take a fucking getting booed by some fans that aren't even fucking, I don't know. I'm gonna stop. I tweeted a bunch of shit about it. It's over and done with. But I agree, booing, not cool. Maybe they shouldn't have booed him. But at the same time, I can't feel bad for Drake being booed by a crowd that really aren't typically known as Drake fans. You really wouldn't expect them that much to be Drake fans, you know. And I'm not gonna fucking talk shit on the crowd. Like, I kind of took a little offense to people making fun of that, those people there, simply because they booed Drake. Like, really, this is that big of a deal? Emo black kids or whatever people want to make fun of. I mean, so what? We don't like Drake. They don't like Drake. I don't like Drake. Is that a problem? Am I need to be ostracized or whatever because I don't like Drake? Like, that's kind of what it felt like at the heart of it. It's like, oh, y'all don't like Drake? more so than the booing. It just kind of almost felt like it came down to, so y'all don't like Drake, huh? What's wrong with y'all? But just don't care for Drake. They just don't care for Drake. I don't know. Like, I don't want to go too long on this, but you know, I think Drake's going to be all right for everybody. I think Drake's going to be okay. I think Drake is going to be okay. You know, I think he's going to pull through. I think he's going to be fine at the end of this. I think he's going to be all right. I have a good feeling about this. I think Drake's going to be all right, y'all. I think so. I think so. I hope I'm right. Because if I'm wrong, then I wasn't right. So, now they're beyond that. The other thing that I really want to talk about is about some reunions going on. Oh, yeah. Reunions. Yes, reunions. Of course, some people know what I'm talking about. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about, who I'm referring to. My Chemical Romance is reuniting. They are coming back together next year. My Chemical Romance was a pretty pivotal band for teenagers in the early to mid 2000s, I guess you would say. Definitely a huge band. Really represent, I guess you could say, the emo scene, or the emo crowd that was going on or whatever. They were very much really trying to describe what their sound was. They were just a rock band, essentially, and they had their own, you know, they had aesthetic that kind of was relatable, or just you know that was very engaging, I guess. I don't know, very interesting for a lot of fans, you know. But they definitely represent the emo crowds, your Hot Topic kids and whatnot, like me back in the day, because I was that age, and they were that band at the time, along with like Fall Out Boy and Paramore and Taking Back Sunday and shit. So, but yeah, I was a fan of MCR. I was kind of late on them. Like, I wasn't, you know, Three Cheers for Revenge, I missed on it. But Black Parade is where I came on board with. I came on board for the Black Parade. Even though realistically I was more a fan of the Used. I was more a fan of the Used and Taking Back Sunday and Fall Out Boy. But I still liked My Chemical Romance. I still liked them. But yeah, people have just been waiting, holding their breaths for an MCR reunion for a long time. I think earlier this year or last year maybe it was, that there was a teaser for something related to MCR and everyone thought it was going to be a reunion. And it wasn't, but we have an official reunion, ladies and gentlemen. They are officially back, back and up and running, man. They have some shows that they are going to be doing very soon, this year, actually. Friday, December 20th, this year, at the Shrine Expo Hall in Los Angeles, California, My Chemical Romance will be making their comeback. They'll be making their return to the stage. My Chemical Romance. The show, though, is already sold out. So if you're just hearing about this and you haven't got tickets, sorry, it's sold out. It's their reunion. They're coming back. You know, what'd you expect? But that's not it, though. That is not it. They have other shows, man. They are back up and running. They will be at Download Fest in Australia next year, headlining. They'll be in New Zealand also with special guests Jimmy Eat World, Midnight Youth, and Miss June. They'll be doing Download Fest in Japan as well, headlining that as well. And they just recently announced a few days ago that that show they'll be doing in Los Angeles will actually have another band opening for them, another band as special guests that I loved back in those days. Thursday, Understanding the Car Crash. It was one of my favorite songs. But, yeah, man. So, Thursday will be on that show as well. But, yeah, man. MCR is back, and I hope they will do a tour, man, because I want to go. I want to see them. I did not get to see them when I was, you know, during their heyday when I was aware of them, because, I liked them, but I wasn't as big a fan of them as I were other bands. But I didn't see a lot of the bands I loved back then when they were out and they were hot and popping. So I got to make up for that. I gotta make up for that, especially with My Chemical Romance. But My Chemical Romance isn't the only band that's back, baby. No, they're not the only one. Because I guess next year is going to be the year of the reunions. But Rage Against the Machine is finally back. Rage Against the Machine is finally back. The word is that they will be possibly headlining Coachella and then doing some other shows as well. But yeah, man, basically, to put it simple, Rage Against the Machine will be coming back next year. They've even gone as far as Prophets of Rage is officially over, which was the side project that everyone in Rage, with the exception of Zach and Chuck D of Public Enemy, and DJ Lore, who's Public Enemy's DJ, and Be Real, Cypress Hill, we're all doing together. That's over, because Rage Against the Machine is fully coming back next year. I don't know if there's been any other shows other than Coachella is supposed to be the one that they'll be coming back doing, but I am praying just as much, just the same thing with MCR, that they will be touring, that they will tour and not do what System of the Down did. Well, System of the Down toured. When System of the Down originally reunited, they did tour, and I was able to catch them, and as I said in my Slipknot episode, that was one of the best metal shows I ever saw, because it was the System of the Down and Deftones, two of my favorite bands ever. And so, yeah, man, wouldn't it be the shit if My Chemical Romance and Rage Against the Machine said, man, why don't we just get together and tour and just fucking just make all the money? That would be the shit. But hopefully they just tour. Hopefully they don't do what System of the Down is now doing, where it's just like, we're just going to do these festivals in these different countries here and there and not release any new music or really hip the states like that. But yeah, I gotta see. These are two of my favorite bands, man. I love fucking Rage Against the Machine. Evil Empire is one of my favorite albums ever. Ever. But yeah, Rage Against the Machine, My Chemical Romance. Yep, they're coming back next year, y'all. And they're not the only ones. Another band I'm a big fan of, the Black Crowes, have recently announced that they are coming back as well next year. They got a show that they're doing around my way next summer that I am definitely going to attempt to see. So yeah, man, 2020, the year of band reunions, I guess. You know, I mean, 3-6 Mafia, they're coming, they're back. You know, GCJ and DJ Paul are back. You know, who else? Who knows who else we will see come back next year? But yeah, man, that's awesome. And yeah, I got some tours to talk about real quick. I'm going to run through these really quick. And then we're going to talk about the show that I got, that, you know, I caught. Well, that's what this show is, right? Korn and Breaking Benjamin are doing a winter tour early next year with special guest Bones UK. Not the rapper Bones, but the band Bones UK. The winter tour kicks off January 23rd in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Yeah, man, Korn, Breaking Benjamin. I'm a fan of Korn. I hope to see Korn very soon, because I really did like their new album, The Nothing. I think that's one of their best albums they've done. They've really been going on a good roll ever since Head came back. But yeah, man. So if you're a Korn fan like I am, or a big Breaking Benjamin fan, definitely want to check out that winter tour they will be doing next year for sure. Also going on around the same time, Motionless in White and Beartooth are teaming up to do the Diseased in Disguise tour next year, kicking off January 4th in Seattle, Washington at Showbox Soldo. I just announced the show around my way as well, and I will definitely be getting my tickets to go to that very soon. So maybe you'll be getting an episode dedicated to this tour next year, which would be awesome. Yeah, now, if you are a fan of baby metal, then, and you live in the UK, baby metal have some dates announced for February next year. A couple dates in the UK. Start on February 19th through the 23rd. Go to their website, babymetal.com, to look those up. They will also be having special guest Creeper, which is a band that is very, very much would not exist without MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. No, they are a band that definitely would not exist without the impact that My Chemical Romance left. And Creeper is back. That's another thing I'm really excited for. It's a side note. I love Creeper. They're back. Creeper Cult. So yeah, Baby Metal with Creeper hitting up the UK on the Metal Galaxy World Tour, which the album Metal Galaxy is the shit. It might be one of my favorite albums this year, for sure. Killswitch Engage with August Burns Red are doing the Atonement Tour. Another awesome album that came out this year was Killswitch Engage's Atonement album. The Atonement Tour for North America kicks off next year. I think, just hit the mic. I think it's March 10th in Cleveland, Ohio at the Agora Theater. It kicks off at. So if you're a fan of either of them bands, Killswitch Engage or August Burns Red, then you might want to go to their respective sites and get tickets to that. Now, that's the hip hop stuff. I mean, that's the rock stuff. We got one more rock show. Dance Gavin Dance and Animals as Leaders are going on a spring tour next year. They'll also have Vela Maya and Royal Coda with them. This might be another show I might have to check out, man. Might be another one. But it kicks off March 12th in LA at the Hollywood Palladium. And yeah, man, Dance Gavin Dance and Animals as Leaders, spring tour 2020. And again, what I was going to say was that's all the rock tours going down, but we got one hip-hop show, one hip-hop tour coming your way very soon. Earth Gang signed to Dreamville. Earth Gang's been making a lot of noise this year. Earth Gang will be taking their Welcome to Mirrorland tour around North America, around the States one more time, I guess, with special guest Mick Jenkins. Mick Jenkins is the shit. Earth Gang of the shit. If you're a fan of both of them like I am, then you might want to hit up this tour, which kicks off January 16th in Seattle. Doesn't say the venue, but you can go look that shit up on earthgang.net. And yeah, man, those are all the wonderful tours that you could be catching next year. Now, let's talk about Miss Carrie Underwood and her Cry Pretty tour, her Cry Pretty 360 tour. This is my second time seeing Carrie Underwood live. And yeah, man, I'm not gonna mess around with any of this shit anymore. I'm just gonna, we're gonna get to it right after this little brief message from one of my fellow Hyphen Podcast Group affiliates. Let's go.
Hiya, Puddins. It's your girl, Harley Quinn, a.k.a. Dr. Harleen Quinzel, here to tell you all about It's Like a Podcast or whatever. We talk about nerd stuff and life stuff, and if you want to know what we're about, check out the Powie Awards, our 100th episode, Q and Slay, or Theater from Our Butts. Have a good day, Puddins, and love, trust, and belief.
I'm sorry. But I'm just a girl, not usually the kind to show my heart to the world. I'm pretty good at keeping it together. I hold my composure for worse or for better. So I apologize if you don't like what you see. But sometimes my emotions get the best of me, and falling apart is as human as it gets. You can't hide it, you can't fight what the truth is.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are now in Catch the Show, show review territory. And this is where I will be giving my review and experience at Miss Carrie Underwood's Cry Pretty Tour 360. Yes. This is her recent tour in support of her recent album, her latest album, Cry Pretty. And why is it 360? Because this show was literally 360 in the round. But as I will go on, I will let you know that that's not the first time she has done a show as unique as that before. Which I gotta give her props on. Because I saw her on her last tour, which I'm gonna have to look up. Pardon me, I'm gonna have to look it up real quick, because I don't remember what the name of the tour was or what the album it was in for. Because sorry guys, I'm not a big Carrie Underwood fan. I like her as a singer, you know, I know a few songs, and that's just pretty much it. Like, I don't really know her, you know, catalog like that. But let me see, I believe it was the Storyteller Tour, maybe? The Storyteller, for the album Storyteller. I think it was Storyteller Tour, Stories in the Round. Which I thought was really a really cool show, just based off the setup of the stage alone. Because, again, like I said, 360 Tour. It was in 360. It was in the round, stage was in the middle, and yeah. Place was, you know, whole building was open for show. So I thought that was really cool, just off of that, because it adds a whole other, excuse me, visual element that you don't normally get from most concerts. You know, it's very rare when you see a show, go to a concert, and you know, the performers and the stage, the whole setup, the whole set is in the middle. Recently, I've actually seen quite a few of them. Last year, I went to U2, and their Songs of what is it? Songs of Experience and hold on, I gotta look that up too. Jeez Louise, lemon squeeze. Okay, hold on a second. What was this tour called? It was the Experience and Innocence Tour. That was last year that I went to. And U2 was, again, it was a 360 tour. U2 was in the middle. U2 was dead in the middle of the tour. Other show I also saw was, later last year, was the Mumford and Sons on there. And I also have to look this one up as well. For their Delta tour last year, that was also in the round. That stage was very unique as well. All the stages for nowadays for shows that are 360 in the round are very unique. I mean, the Aubrey and the Three Amigos tour, but with Drake and Migos, that tour I saw, what was it, a couple years ago now, I believe, or was it last year? I honestly didn't. I think it was last year. Yeah, it was last year I saw it. So that's about three shows, probably more, that I saw last year that were also in the round. So maybe it's not as rare as as it once was. But I will tell you one. But Carrie Underwood is one that seems to really be putting her stamp on it, because this is the second tour she's done is the second tour she's done back to back, you know, in the round. So dope. I know not too long ago too, I believe Jay-Z did his 444 tour in the round as well. I didn't go see that one. But yeah, so it's not as taboo as maybe it once was. You know, you used to really luck out on seeing artists do these type of shows, you know, or really, you know, it used to be more special, but I guess it still is, you know, but it seems like it's kind of becoming a little more common, I guess, nowadays. I don't know, we'll see. I'll let you know on the next artist I see who's in the round or doing a 360 setup for their show. But yeah, man, it's Carrie Underwood. It's not the first time I've seen Carrie Underwood. It's not my first foray into the artist that is Carrie Underwood. I've definitely been hip. I've definitely been hip to Miss Underwood since American Idol. I believe she was in 2004. It was. Season 4 of American Idol. She won 2005. It was 2005 when that happened, so she was a 2005 season 4 winner of American Idol. I'm trying to see, remember, who was she up against? Who was the runner-up? Because I know, and sorry to all the Carrie Underwood fans who are listening to this, but I just know I was more for the person she was up against. And I believe... We'll see. But I'm pretty sure that it was... Was it Bo Bice, actually? I think it was Bo Bice. I think it was actually Bo Bice. Yeah, it was actually Bo Bice. I guess I was thinking of, is it Taylor Hicks? Soul Patrol? Is that his name? I guess I was thinking of him more. I definitely was a Soul Patrol dude. Looking back on it, I was like, it was what it was. It was a time. But yeah, I was more for Bo Bice. Because I just like rock. I was just like, let the rock singers do it. I think Constantine was originally part of it. Yeah, it was Constantine Morales. Constantine Morales. I think I was for him originally, and once he was gone, I think that's when I was like, well, I'm going with Bowden. I wanted the rock dude to win, basically. I just wanted the rock stars. I was like, it's rock star, man. I'll pay for the rock star. But no, it came down to Miss Underwood, and you know what? Fast forward, man. Over 10 years later, almost 15 years later, as she says a few times during the show, fast forward, you know, it's 15 years later, pretty much, and, she's a star. She's the star. She's one of the stars to break out from American Idol. Really, it's only her and Kelly Clarkson that have really become as big as they have from winning the show. I mean, yeah, you know, you got Jordan Sparks, you know, a little bit, but you know, she hasn't reached their level, fortunately. Not that she's bad or anything, it just, you know, didn't go as planned, I guess, in that degree. The other only person I can think of besides them that I guess, you know, Fantasia, of course, she's one, but again, it's still not at the level of Kelly and Carrie. You know, the other person I can kind of, only other person I can kind of think that's, you know, on their level from American Idol to some degree is Jennifer Hudson, but Jennifer Hudson never won. Jennifer Hudson didn't win. And on top of that, you know, she's not really doing these kind of shows. She's not at the same level as them, you know, and I would go as far as saying maybe now that Carrie Underwood is even surpassed Kelly Clarkson. Cause, I think Kelly Clarkson is kind of, you know, taken a different route than maybe what she once was at one point. I think Carrie Underwood just sort of kept her train running in the lane that she started up in, and she's just still been in that lane. It's just, she's still doing these shows, you know. I don't know anybody else, you know, that's from American Idol that's doing it like this, man. So gotta give Miss Underwood her props. She is pretty much the biggest American Idol winner as of right now, to date, at least. Like, she's doing arenas. She's doing big 360, huge production type tours. So, yeah. Put some respect on Carrie Underwood's name, y'all. Now, the other reason I was never really a big Carrie Underwood fan is because it's country, and I've just recently gotten into country, like a couple years ago, you know. And even with that, Carrie Underwood is not really the type of country I would listen to so much, but I definitely will say she's one of the better singers in country, which is, over the last few years, has become a little more common than it once was at one point, at least for pop country, at very least. You know, nowadays you got, you know, you got Chris Stapleton, you know, and many others, not just him, but, you know, just off the top of my head, but, you know, it's more singing, it's more singers, some people you can tell, like, really, you know, sing, and not just, you know, do a little twang with your voice and kind of sing in a little melody, like, isn't, you know, nothing like that, you know, which is one of the things that I've never really been able to get into country with, is because it can get easily repetitive. Like, a lot of artists, at least a lot of mainstream country artists, use the same melodies and riffs and whatnot that another artist in their field would use, you know. So it's you know, it becomes, sometimes it can get a little more redundant than just regular pop, you know, sometimes even rap. I mean, that happens with mainstream music because it's mainstream and they're chasing the sound that appeals to everyone. But country to me was the one that just kind of seemed like very boxed in and not enough, you know, variety so much. Like, you could sort of put your finger on the sound. You know, oh, Hunter Hayes is another one that I think could really sing and is really talented as well. Hunter Hayes, another one I like. But then, you know, over time, over the last few years, you know, you've gotten your Sturgill Simpsons, Chris Stapleton, Zach Brown Band's another one I really like. And Kacey Musgraves, who's probably my favorite. In the country field, even though she kind of seems like she's kind of gone more to a pop side, but still got her toe in country, you know. And you know, you get the High Woman. If y'all haven't heard that, the High Woman is good. Maren Morris as well. She's a good singer, really good singer. Yeah, and yeah, man. I mean, so, you know, there's a lot more variety in country now to where I'm more into it than I ever was. And, you know, I still see why some people would be like, I listen to everything except country. But, you know, I still would say, don't knock it till you try it. Just got to find what appeals to you, really. But yeah, I don't knock Carrie Underwood. She's just not my kind of country artists I would listen to, but you can't knock her voice, her vocal skills are top notch, for real. Like, she can sing, like, she can sing, but she can also sing, and that's why I'll give her that, for sure. So, you know, this is the you know, there's a big deal about this tour and about this and at all, just because, you know, this is her comeback, basically. Cry Pretty is basically her comeback. Because I remember there was she was injured. I believe, I'm reading this off of Wiki. It says that she sustained injuries in a fall at home that resulted in a broken wrist and several facial stitches. Ooh. Underwood did not make any public appearances for several months following the incident. I can understand that. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. That was a, that kind of, was that either forgotten or did it just really come by really quick? Because then it was just like, okay, she's back. Cry pretty. But yeah, she's, I remember that and being, you know, being a little bit concerned too. I was just like, huh. Because it was like she's really hiding away, you know, whatever happened. But she's back, obviously. And yeah, Cry Pretty Tour 360. Let's get into it, man. So this is going to be a little brief because this show is very straightforward. It's a very straightforward show. Yeah, unique setup, unique, you know, big production, all that jazz, but it's pretty straightforward for the most part, man, as a show. Like, it wasn't that crazy, you know, than what I've typically seen for, in concerts. Probably the most standout thing was just sort of the transition of in between performances and the use of a DJ. I believe his name was DJ Venom. I'm gonna double check that really quick if I can find it. I think that's his name. I think that's the dude's name. DJ, I think it was DJ Venom. I'm sure of it. But yeah, man. So the most interesting thing about the show is this guy. This guy DJing from as soon as you come inside to pretty much till Carrie Underwood comes on stage. He's in the middle of the stage. He's DJing. And what's cool is he's mixing in, you know, popular country songs with pop and hip hop and rock. It was pretty cool. I mean, it's not nothing new. I even know some DJs who do that. Shout out to DJ Strizzy, who definitely knows how to mix the country in with anything on his playlist, you know, or in his setup. But yeah, it was very interesting to see it at a country show, because it's kind of cool that, you know, they're taking into account that it's like not everyone just listens to country, because that's what you would assume. If you're a fan of a country artist and you're a fan of country music, which is actually something funny you hear throughout the night, because so many people, I think even he said it at one point, he was like, make some noise if you love country music. And it's like, hey, you're playing Lil Jon right now. Lil Jon is playing right now. And you're asking, and you're telling people to scream for country music. It's like, yeah, it's a little ironic right now. I mean, yeah, it's country show basically, but you know, it's like, hey, let's make some noise for this specific genre, which you rarely see. Like maybe a hip hop show or like an old school hip hop show, they'll be like, make some noise for hip hop, you know, or maybe, you know, at an old school metal show, they'll be like, make some noise if you love heavy metal, you know. But rarely do you go to, like, I don't know, Ariana Grande concert, and she's just like, if you love pop music, make some noise. It's not really, you know, you don't really hear it like that. So, you know, that's kind of funny, I guess, that, you know, throughout the night, not just him, but I think even, you know, the opening acts up to, I think even Carrie Underwood herself at one point was just like, you know, just kept asking the crowd, like, if you love country music, or make some noise if you love country music, you know. And it's, you know, it's like, well, your DJ is playing an assortment of not just country music. So, which was funny because, like, I think one of the last things he played was that guy that actually got the crowd really up and going, and you could hear everybody singing along to it, was Old Town Road, which originally was even debated. Is this a country song or not? And honestly, I don't think it matters. I think it's just the song of the people. It's the song of 2019. It's going to be a song that people are probably going to be jamming to 5 to 10 years from now, because I've seen this song get played numerous times in different settings, and everyone knows it, and everyone is singing along to it. And it's a vibe. It's a vibe, for real. So, yeah. The DJ was the interesting element in this, because, you know, he's playing, he's mixing in country music along with just a bunch of everything. It's like a nice long mix he had going on, man, that was just playing, you know, before the show and in between acts up till, like I said, till Carrie actually came out. And he was basically not just the DJ for the night, but he was also the MC, because, you know, he eventually would end up bringing out the opening acts, who our first opening act was Runaway June. So first off, the thing I liked about this show off the get-go was, aside from, you know, the DJ mix, I like the DJ, if I didn't clarify that, I liked DJ Venom, if I believe his name is, and what he brought to the show. I actually liked the addition of him. But the other thing I liked about this tour, this show, was just it basically being about the women. This is a women-only show, almost. Of course, other than the DJ and their backing bands. But this was mostly for the ladies. You know, this whole, like, the opening acts and the main event were ladies. Are all ladies in country. Specifically, groups were the opening acts. Runaway June is a trio. First, they're signed to Wheelhouse Records. And they are apparently from Nashville, Tennessee, made up of Naomi Cook, Hannah Mulholland, and Jennifer Wayne. Wheelhouse Records is an imprint of Broken Bow Records. And they've been nominated for an Academy of Country Music Award for Best New Vocal Group in 2018. I'm reading literally all this on Wikipedia. But yeah, I think I've heard a little bit of Runaway June. I can't say for certain that I know who they are exactly, but I'm pretty sure I've come across them at least, because their name is very familiar. And I mean, I'm always, you know, got my ear to, you know, what's the new going ons with the groups in country, especially the lady groups, because, you know, the High Women, Pistol Annies, you know, I like to be a little hip to those and see what the ladies are doing in country when the ladies come together in country. So, but yeah, so they were all right. They weren't bad. Their sound was pretty typical pop country, but I like some pop country. Like, sometimes it's a guilty pleasure, sometimes not. Like, Kane Brown's put out some stuff that I've kind of liked. I like Old Dominion. They're not bad to me. I know that some people feel some way about, but I like their old album, their last album, which was, what was their last album called? I have it on my iPod. Happy Endings. I actually liked Happy Endings. You know, I thought that was really good. I thought it was really good. Nice little, you know, kind of pop country record. But, yeah, so I heard a few songs I liked by them. I have to listen to their album, Blue Roses, which came out this year. I have to give that a listen probably after this episode. Maybe if I can remember in the beginning of this episode. I mean, you've heard it before I have at this point in the episode. I will let you know if I dug the album or not. I don't know, but, yeah, man, I've heard some songs during their set that were, decent, you know, not bad, and everything else was just kind of like, okay, it's, you know, I've heard something like this before. They were good, though. Their harmonies were all right. Their harmonies weren't too, mind-blowing or, you just like, wow, you know, amazing or anything like that. You know, But you know, they sound good together vocally. That's what I will say. I did one thing I kind of liked, but at the same time, it's fine funny. And I find it funny because I consider it a country music trope, just from performances I've seen. But I think at one point they all three of them had acoustic guitars. And I've made jokes, me and friends and family, we've made jokes before of like country music is like the one genre where you can never have too many acoustic guitars. Because I think it was like, what was it like? Was it Big and Rich? Or I think it was actually Florida Georgia Line. They were like on like Jimmy Kimmel or Late or The Tonight Show or something. They were playing and, you know, it was like they had a 6-piece band. And half the band had acoustic guitars. And the other half had electric guitars. So it's just like, you can always throw an acoustic guitar in there somewhere, I guess. But, yeah, so I was just like, oh yeah, well of course all three of them have acoustic guitars, yeah, and they look beautiful by the way too. I like their outfits. They weren't wearing gowns, but they had like these long, I don't know what you call them. They're kind of like dress sweaters, or I don't know. I'm not. I don't know my clothing and shit like that. So. Whatever, they looked beautiful. They looked beautiful, and they didn't sound bad neither. So, yeah, Runaway June, I thought they were pretty good. And I'm gonna check out their album Blue Roses, their debut album, Blue Roses, and you should too to see what they're about. Might be better than what I thought I heard at the show, which they weren't bad. They were good. You know, it's just you know I was listening. I was just like. I'm not really hearing anything that makes me want to listen to them, but I'm still going to check them out because I like what they're doing on stage, the three of them. Head Over Heels, I think, was the one that I was like, oh, this isn't bad. It's all right. Buy My Own Drinks. No, that's the one I can buy my own drinks. Yeah, I like that one. That was more of, I like that song. It's sort of like their, you know, sort of like the, you know, I'm a woman, I don't need a man type, you know, feminist song. I like it when, because you don't get that enough from country. Country's a little one of those things that's kind of been, you know, inclusive of women, but still a little more male dominated. So, you know, I mean, how many times can you hear about, you know, dudes at the bar drinking in their trucks and, you know, they see that pretty woman and, they just gotta have her, yeah, you know, kind of songs, but, yeah, Runaway June was cool. After them, you know, a little more from the DJ, and then he introduced and brought out Maddie and Tay. Maddie and Tay, I believe I'm familiar with them. I believe because the reason I say I believe is because there was at one point a few years ago where whether it was pop or pop country, sort of not indie, but sort of like, I don't know, like upcoming pop and pop country artists, there was always a women duo, a young women duo. And it was always her name and her name. That's how their group names were always were. So I don't know if I'm familiar with Maddie and Tay or if they're new, but Maddie and Tay, it says they've been active since 2010, so I'm pretty sure I've come across their music at one point. Let me just make sure, because there was one group I remember had a song that I did kind of like. I don't know if it was Maddie and Tay. Probably wasn't Maddie and Tay, but I don't know. I don't. So yeah, but Maddie and Tay was next, and Maddie and Tay, yeah, they are signed to. Well, they were signed to Dot Records. I think they're signed now to Mercury Nashville. Not that it matters, but I'm just reading a little bio on them. But, yeah, they're singers, they're songwriters, best friends, as they say, at some point during the show. And, yeah, they were fine, actually. They were all right. They had more of a bigger backing band for them. And honestly, I don't have too much to say. I'm sorry if you're a Maggie and Tay fan and you've been listening to this point because you're just like, so what do you think of Maggie and Tay? I kind of had the same feelings about them as I did with Runaway June. You know, just, they're fine. Maggie and Tay are fine. They're good. But I didn't hear much from them that really piqued my interest. Like, their vocals were okay, you know, and I'll get to the vocals for actually both groups a little later, because there was a certain part during the show where you heard all the women together, and it was a clear observation of something that I was thinking about, you know, which we'll get to in a little bit. But Maggie and Tay, they were okay. They were fine. It wasn't really not much I could really say about them other than they were all right, you know. So yeah, we're gonna fast forward after the opening acts. Oh, both opening acts though overall were pretty good. Not bad. All I can say is good, you know, not bad at all. I mean, you can't be bad on that stage. You are surrounded by the crowd, and the stage is huge, and yeah, you're right there. You're just literally the center of attention in that moment. So, yeah. Maddie and Tay were fine. Runaway June were fine. And next up was Carrie Underwood, introduced, brought out by the DJ, I believe, again. I think it's DJ Venom. That's what it sounded like he was saying. Introduced Carrie Underwood. And yeah, lights went off. These sort of see-through curtains came down around the stage. And, you know, had these, you know, visuals and effects coming on them and whatnot. And then they showed Carrie Underwood's name. Of course, the crowd went nuts because it's 80 to 85% all women crowd. Carrie Underwood in cowboy boots, that too. But yeah, so crowd was going nuts. You know, Carrie Underwood's there, and she rises up from beneath the stage. Carrie Underwood comes out, and I believe the first song she does is Southbound. And yeah, show kicks off there, you know, and again, very straightforward show. There's not too much I can dive into. Carrie's got her band. They're good. You know, guitars, bassists, drummers, you know, the works, you know, I believe there's violinist. I can't remember. Fiddler. Not sure exactly, but, you know, backup singers, all that. She's got, you know, she's got her backing band. She can sing. She's got pipes. And yeah, they're performing on the stage. There's some pyro here and there, some fade here and there, you know, and whatnot. It's a show, you know. There's no distinctive specific moments that really stick out for me, especially since I'm not a big Carrie Underwood fan like that. Now, I take that back a little bit. There are some moments in the show that did stick out for me, other than, you know, the regular portion of her set that is, you know, just her performing. There was a moment in the show halfway during her set where she basically said she, you know, since it's been like I was saying, it's been like 15 years since she won American Idol, and now she's here where she is, you know. And I like, that's another thing, side note again, That's another thing I actually did like about her, is that she just kind of shoots the shit with the crowd. Like, she just kind of talks to the crowd normally. She's not really, it doesn't sound like she's reading from a script or whatever, or she's going based off of the script of the show or anything like that. Like, she's just kind of, it seems like she's just kind of winging it. Just kind of talking to the crowd, like, y'all my people, y'all my friends, we're cool, you know, like, we're fam, whatever, you know. And I kind of dig that. Like, there was a genuine authenticity to it, with the way she talked to the crowd. So, you know, she was talking about, you know, basically just, at this point in the show, she was just talking about basically what even made her go to audition for American Idol. And because it's been 15 years since then, she pretty much decided that she was going to do some of the songs that her and her band, well, some of the members of her band that have been with her since she won the show, haven't done since those early days. So the songs she did were Temporary Home, off of her third album, Play On. I believe it's Play, yeah, third album, Play On. See You Again, off of her fourth album, Blown Away. I Know You Won't, I don't know which album that's off of. Just a Dream, off of her second album, Carnival Ride. And then she did Dream On by Aerosmith, which I have to say was actually really good. She actually killed that performance of it. I have to give her time for that. That was probably one of the standout moments for me, because I was just like, oh, she's singing it, like, for real, which I've rarely, if ever, heard anyone actually hit it like that. Now, I know it's been covered to death on American Idol before, but, you know, I've not been paying attention to the amount of times people have freaking performed Dream on American Idol. I mean, I haven't watched American Idol since Jordan Sparks won. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not keeping up with that. All I know is that when she did Dream On, I was just like, okay, Carrie Underwood. Yeah, you hit those notes. So, yeah, that was good. Right after that, she actually did Jesus Take the Wheel. I am familiar with that song. Something in the Water was another one I'm familiar with. She did that one as well. And this was the moment that I kind of mentioned about with the women, the rest of the women. So she mentioned, of course, that this was, you know, she wanted to basically put together a tour, you know, that was all women. Dope. Loved it. And that's why she had Runaway June and Maggie and Tay with her. And she brought both groups out. And this is what I like. They did a medley of hits from some of country's finest women. You know, not finest attractive women, but just sort of legendary women from in country. You know, they did Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette. Is it Wynette or Wynette? I don't know how to always say it. Wynette. You know, they did Coal Miner's Daughter by Loretta Lynn. They did, of course, 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. She's in Love with the Boy by Trisha Yearwood. I think Trisha Yearwood passed away, didn't she? No, Trisha Yearwood is still alive. Okay, cool. Trisha Yearwood is still alive. Independence Day by Martina McBride. So what was it? Wild One by Faith Hill. Hell yeah. Why Haven't I Heard From You, of course, by Reba McEntire. And the one, oh, I can't leave this. What was Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline, Rocking with the Rhythm of the Rain by The Judds, which I thought that was pretty, it's a good one to do, The Judds, with Naomi and Wynonna Judd. And the one I was just like, okay, if y'all doing this, y'all have to do this one. Like, I was thinking it as they were like halfway into it. I was like, you gotta do this one. Like, it just, come on, it makes sense. You gotta do this one. And of course, they ended it with the one I was thinking of, which is Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain. So I was like, okay, there you go. That's the cherry on top of this medley. You guys did that. You guys did that. And I like, too, that they had the pictures of the women on the screens as they were performing them. That was my favorite part probably of the entire show. I thought that was really a really dope tribute. Like, that's something you probably would have seen on the Country Music Awards show maybe or something like that, but I thought they did better than you actually would have probably seen it on a Country Music Awards show, you know, the CMAs or whatnot. So I actually really dug that part of the show. I mean, they hit the ones. They hit the legends in the game. And I thought that was I really liked that medley a lot. I really did. I thought it was good. They sounded good together, even though what I was actually going to say was Carrie was out singing all of them. Carrie was out singing all of them. Somebody in Runaway June has a good voice to where they were close to Carrie, but Carrie was schooling them, to be honest. Carrie was schooling them on it. But Carrie was leading the way, and yes, it was her part of the show. It's her show. It's her tour. You know, she was inviting them on stage for something she was probably her idea anyway. So she was pretty much leading the charge through this tribute, this medley. But yeah, man, it was very obvious that who was the singer amongst the six ladies of the evening. But I really enjoyed this part of the show. I really did dig it. I really did, especially that they ended with the one I was thinking, like, you gotta end it with this one. And they did it. They ended it with Shania Twain's Man, I Feel Like a Woman, which is like, yeah, of course, because this is your tribute to the women of country music. So, bam. Try to think if there was anybody they left out. And yeah, Dixie Chicks. They didn't do anything about Dixie Chicks, man, which is like that. We could kind of go into a whole other topic conversation about like how the Dixie Chicks have just sort of been blackballed from country, you know, almost, where it's just like, you guys forget that there was this trio of women that was just huge at one point in the game. You're like, really, y'all don't not acknowledging? So yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I like this part. That was my favorite part of the show, I have to say. Right after that, she did Undo It, which is a song I do like by Carrie Underwood. That is a song I dig by her. Then she brought out someone, one of the guys who helped her write The Champion, you know, the song she does for the NF was it for the Super Bowl? I think she did for the Super Bowl, actually. But let's see. There was a few. It was one of the songwriters. It was Christopher Bridges, Chris DeStefano, and Brett James. She brought out one of them to rap Ludacris's part, which, if I had to be completely honest, they didn't do it that with justice. But I mean, come on, it's someone who wrote the song and Ludacris. Ludacris is Christopher Bridges. Hold on. Ludacris is Chris Bridges. Christopher Bridges is one of the people that wrote the song, and Ludacris is Christopher Bridges. So, was it Christopher Bridges? Because that's Ludacris. It's that's Ludacris. Get it? Whatever. I'm moving on from that. So it was either Chris DeStefano or Brett James. I think she may have brought out both to help, but I don't know. But that was okay part. And she ended ended her set with Before He Cheats, which is the song I know by her. And I remember I used to not like that song, but over time it's like one of those songs that's become somewhat nostalgic in a odd way, in a twist. So yeah, I'm just like, I like that song now. Like, that was a song I was like, when is she gonna do that? That's the one I wanna hear. She did that, left stage, pyro at the end of it, boom, and that was it. And, you know, of course, there's that little break in between, you know, the end of the show and the encore, of course. She came back out for the encore, did Cry Pretty and Love Wins, and that was the end of the show, pretty much. And yeah, man, it was all right. It was an okay show. I can't say it was even better. I can't say it was better than the last one, the Storytellers one. I can't even say that. I would just say it was just a good show. You know, it was just this good, pretty much, honestly. The opening acts were good. I thought Runaway June was good. Maddie and Day, they were all right too. And Carrie, she was fine. You know, she did what I expect. You know, I like Carrie Underwood. I don't have a problem with her. So yeah, man, I the show was all right. If I had the great show, as I do normally, I give it a C, C plus, because I just thought the stage set was really good. That was probably the biggest thing, along with, of course, the medley, the country, the Women of Country medley that she did with Runaway June and Maddie and Tay. I think the stage setup was probably one of the most impressive, probably the most impressive thing about the entire show, in my opinion, the production. You know, but other than that, the show was all right, you know. If you're a fan of Carrie Underwood and you're thinking about going, I say definitely go. You'll enjoy this way more than I did. I was close to loving it, but it just, you know, not too much happened that I was just, like, blown away by. It was just kind of predictable, you know, a little bit, I guess, which is odd to say when you're going into a show blind, but, you know, it was what it was. I have no problem with it. You know, I think if you're a fan of Carrie Underwood, or if you just want to go see a big production country music concert, this would be one of them, man. Yeah, so go, you know, if you're thinking about going to see Carrie Underwood on the Cry Pretty Tour 360, go see Carrie Underwood on the Cry Pretty Tour 360 then. I think you would get your money's worth, in my opinion. And yeah, that is it. That is all I have to say about this show, man. If you want to hear more of what I think about just music and pop culture in general, or when I had, or when, you know, maybe get a little hint of what's the next show I'm going to see that will be talked about on a future episode of this show, go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Catcher of Shows. That's Catcher, such as Catcher in the Rye, of, like, of course, you're going to follow me, shows, because I catch shows. I'm the catcher of shows, and this has been Catch the Show. I'm your host, EG, saying see you guys next time. And, you know, you can look pretty when you cry, but you can't cry pretty. Or maybe you can. I don't know. I've never cried pretty. I mean, you could pretty cry, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe you can cry pretty. Or maybe you can pretty cry. I don't know. Maybe you cry. Maybe you cry a little bit pretty. I don't know. Cry a little bit pretty. You can pretty much kind of cry. I don't know.
Yo, what up? Miles Amadeus Prowler here, host of the I Black Man podcast, member of the Hyphen Podcast Network, and now host of a podcast called Fresh. Now, a simple man. I like subs to dubs, manga to anime. Now, the way I feel is, it doesn't matter what the press says, doesn't matter what the politician, hell, even the feminists say. Doesn't matter if the whole country decides that something is whack is dope. This podcast was founded on one principle above all, the requirement that we stand up for what we believe in, no matter the consequences or the odds. When the internet, when the press, and the whole world tells you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree between the rivers of continuity and canon. Look them square in the face and you tell them, no, you move. Podcast called Fresh, coming to you guys, Hype Podcast Network. Check it out, coming soon.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and comment. This has been a Hyphen Podcast Network production.
Dirt at Festus. I'm getting paid at exposure.